from Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move on into the summer. And we have had two great vocations events in the month of June. The Vocations Benefit Dinner just took place at Good Shepherd Parish in Elk Grove, and I'm pleased to announce that it was a sellout. They had 325 people there. They had seminarians and many altar servers from all over the diocese. A wonderful, wonderful evening, some great keynote speakers, and everybody just had a great time, but it made us all realize that we're in good hands here in the Diocese of Sacramento in terms of vocations, and people are really gravitating that way, and it was just wonderful to see all the support for our seminarians. The second event is coming up the 28th of the month, a Tuesday, at 7 p.m. at Christian Brothers High School. Doors open at 6:30, and the snack bar is open. You can get hot dogs or nachos or something to drink, and they let you bring it in the gym. And it's the priest and seminarians basketball game. And here to tell us just a little bit more about it, Father Jovito Rata from All Hallows. Father, always good to hear your voice.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Hello,
are you? I don't hear the basketball bouncing in the background.
Yeah, we didn't have a practice. Oh, no, we had a practice last Friday, but we have another one this coming Friday at St. Rose.
Very good. Very good. Is that the final one before you suit up and take the floor?
Yes, it's the final one. And it's a perfect time, like Warriors in Boston.
Now, you know, there was a time a few years ago when it was the priests against the seminarians. Now they've kind of melded it. It's just priests and seminarians. They divide into two teams. And the priests were quite a bit behind. You went into the game, and you made three straight three-pointers, and the priests won.
Yes, it was a miracle.
It was a miracle. I was worried that some of the seminarians were going to drop out, but they didn't.
Just part of the game, yeah.
Just part of the game. And you just kept swishing. It looked like something out of a movie, you know.
Yeah, I know. Those were the days, yes.
So are you playing, coaching, or doing both?
I'm playing and coaching, too.
Yes. Do we have any ringers? Do we have any guys that, really have some NBA talent?
Yeah, Father Rainier, Silva.
Yes.
Yes, I don't know yet with the seminarians because some of them became a priest right now. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing to me how many the people come from various parishes and they root for their priest, you know, and they get so excited when he gets in the game, you know, and it's just so much fun. And it's always packed. So
yes.
So when you have a practice, what do you do? Do you run plays or you just practice your shots? What do you do at a practice for?
We play a normal game, like
you just play the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, play the game.
And wow, so you obviously have played a lot of basketball.
No, actually, before pandemic, yes, but during the pandemic because of the time and also the play. And also the quarantine
thing,
we stopped playing basketball, so we kind of
rested. Wow. So how many priests are going to play?
I think as of now, 20. We are 20, so.
Wow. And what, maybe seven or eight seminarians,
six.
Something like that?
Six
seminarians. Yeah. So you got 26, so you got 13 on each team. And we should tell people that it's referees. They have real referees who come in, and they call fouls.
Yes.
And I think if you foul out, you have to go to confession.
Yeah, of course.
and
one time we had a game at Purfield when I was assigned there one time, and then one of the kid, like eighth grader, like told me, like, Father Jovito, that's unfair because Jesus in your side. And it's like, I told him, yeah, yes, of course. We don't show mercy in the court. We're going to show something in the court.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, I was at the Vocation Center at Good Shepherd last Saturday, and I noticed that the scoreboard in the gym, because they had it in the gym, which kind of doubles as the hall, and the scoreboard for the basketball was right next to the crucifix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm thinking that you wouldn't want to be the visiting team in that gym. Because
yeah, maybe they're praying like to win.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah. So, you know, this is such a great idea. I know a couple of summers we had a soccer match as well, but it was always about 105 degrees when we do the soccer, but the basketball is so popular.
Yes.
And it's obvious that some of these priests have they're good athletes.
Yes, the basketball is an indoor court, so people can easily and they're comfortable, but
right.
And the soccer game is too hot. One thing that we made this event during my time was to tell the people that priests are ordinary people.
Right.
We live a normal life, we pray, we eat, and we enjoy life, and to show to them that we are not abnormal.
Right.
We are normal, living like right. A normal people, and show to the people of God that we can do, we can play, and we can enjoy life.
Yes, yes. And that's it's so important that people see you as, you know, as quote-unquote normal human beings like the rest of us, you know. And
yes, yes.
And it's really on full display in this basketball game.
But it's an awesome experience also for the parishioners looking their priest, not only on the altar wearing robes and celebrating right. masses, clerical shirts, that they are like ordinary people bringing the ball and
right.
dribbling the ball and shooting the ball. So
and they're sweating profusely.
Yeah, we are human beings.
Yes, yes. No, it's a great event. It's just $15 a person. If it's from kindergarten through all the way through college, it's just $5, and you can buy six tickets for $60. So that's just $10 a person.
Correct.
And it's great fun, and it all benefits Vocations here in the Diocese
Correct.
Of Sacramento, coming on the heels of a very successful Vocation benefit dinner, which raised a lot of money for Vocations as well. And so how do you divide up the teams?
We divide it according to height and according to age.
Mm-hmm.
And then we divide it also like how we're going to balance the team so that the team will be in a good shape to play.
Be competitive, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at this moment, because of lack of practice and the momentum is out because of pandemic, so we are trying to play it slow, maybe just
mm-hmm.
just have fun, having fun, yeah.
Maybe we need to lower the baskets from 10 feet to 8 feet.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And then you guys could slam dunk every now and then.
Yes. So to play like Stephen Curry or Michael Jordan.
Oh, Michael Jordan, yeah. So, you know, Curry. Oh, what a magician he is! It's just they were the Warriors are so much fun to watch. So,
yes.
This is the NBA is done. The Warriors won last week, so it's over. So this is the only game in town. If you want to see basketball, the Kings don't start again until October. If you want to see basketball, this is it. Christian Brothers, Tuesday the 28th. Plenty of seating, but it will get full. And there's nothing like a full gym for a basketball game. And you don't even have to bring your dinner. Just buy something from the snack bar and enjoy this game.
All right.
Father, I'm looking for you to make some threes near the end of the game.
We'll see.
Don't hold back.
Yes, we'll see.
All right. Thanks so much, Father.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, all the faithful people in Sacramento, and then see you in the court. And God bless you and in these trying times, and have a wonderful day.
Hey, thanks so much, Father. God bless. We'll talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you again soon. That's Father Jovito Rata, and he gave three threes right near the end of the game. They went from like seven, eight points down to actually winning the game, I think, by 1 point right at the end. They carried him off the court. He was he's a real hero. And then at the end of the game, all the priests, all the seminarians, anybody who wants to comes out on the floor, and they all sing Salve Regina to close the evening. So it's a wonderful, wonderful event, a great fundraiser. Again, Tuesday, the 28th of June, Christian Brothers High School on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Doors open at 6:30. The game will start at 7 o'clock. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at the thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Jennifer Campbell, Director of Trinity Pines Catholic Center. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Thanks, Jennifer, for all you do. Jennifer is up there at Camp Pendola running the camp. They missed the last couple of years and never got to have that 60th anniversary celebration of Camp Pendola. So praise the Lord. The Camp Pendola is open for business. They still have a few slots open. It's week long. It's like Sunday through Friday, and so they have about six different sessions throughout the summer, each with a different theme. And they also have family camp over Labor Day weekend. So still have a chance to sign up for that. Go to Pendola, P-E-N-D-O-L-A, pendola.org. And Jennifer will be up there and be happy to see what would work for you or your kids, or maybe family camp on Labor Day weekend, the first weekend of September. Well, we are pleased to welcome in one of our diocesan seminarians here in Sacramento. Ralph Chaunchy joins us now by phone. Ralph, good day to you.
Good day, Bob. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. You were at the Vocations Awareness Dinner, I presume?
I was. It was a good night. Good night having you emceeing as well.
It was a lot of fun. I was so pleased that it was sold out. The place was packed.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a big hall. I mean, it was a big place.
Definitely, yeah. It was a beautiful night, and we would get to meet everyone and have everyone come out. So it was great.
Yeah, it was really a great, great dinner and a great, great program, and getting to just hear you know, see all of our seminarians and hear some of them talk and hear Bishop Soto talk and Sister Ponce talked and just on and on and on. So, and Victor Amador spoke, one of the seminarians spoke as well. And a wonderful, wonderful night. And it's nice to know that there is so much support for our seminarians here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Absolutely.
So, tell us about yourself.
Well, as you mentioned, thanks be to God, I'm a seminarian to the diocese. I was just accepted a couple months ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be heading over to my first year of seminary up in Oregon. I'll be starting with my prepaduta gear. Grew up here in Sacramento. Attended St. Mel Parish, the great St. Mel.
You know, the great St. Mel's, yes, in Fair Oaks.
So I went to, did most of my sacraments there. I went to school there for 8 years. Then went over to Cristo Rey High School, where I just graduated.
Oh, you went to Cristo Rey?
I did. Yeah.
Wonderful school.
Oh, just a great school. The work-study program, everything. Just a lot of good experience over there.
Now, the students at Cristo Rey, one day a week, will go to jobs. Where did you work?
You know, for 2 years, I was over there at the pastoral center, working at the diocese.
Right.
For family formation, then I worked in a safe environment another year. And another year, I was over at St. Robert's School. So all my years at Cristo Rey, I was with the diocese.
You were with the diocese.
Right. So, and my last year was the COVID year.
So, okay.
I had to spend that at home, but majority of my time was over at the diocese, which was a blessing.
And, of course, Cristo Rey now is in that beautiful new facility.
Oh, man. Such an upgrade from the previous campus.
I remember the old campus. My wife was employed there in the beginnings of Cristo Rey. She was the one that would go out and try to find the jobs for, go to law firms and the legislature and stuff and say, hey, you know, we've got this program, and would you be willing to employ one of these great high school students for a year or so? She and I are both very fond of Cristo Rey.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great, yeah. It's great to see just the growth of that school and how much they've done and how much they've grown over time, and such a blessing to just be a part of there for the past 4 years. It's just a really good place run by the Jesuits and the Sisters of Mercy. And for this past year, I was over at Sac State majoring in political science.
Mm-hmm.
Just wrapped up my first year there, about a month ago now, and that's all sort of brought me to where I am today. And I'm super happy to be a seminarian and to begin this this great journey. So
you're not going to complete your studies at Sacramento State?
No, they'll be sending me up to Oregon. And
to Mount Angel.
Right. Yeah.
So what's in store for you now? What's laid out for you over the next few years?
Yeah, so in August, I'll be heading up to Mount Angel to begin my prepaduta gear, which is a new thing, a new program that the Vatican just laid out for us here, and especially here in the United States. It'll be the first time Mount Angel is offering the program, so even there, kind of a little shaky on what that means.
Say that word again.
Prepaduta. Yeah, I mean, there was a good amount of people at the dinner, actually, came up to me like, hey, you know, what is this big word, you know? And there was one guy who I was trying to, you know, help him pronounce it. It took him a few minutes. He finally got it. I'm like, well, now the real test say it 10 times fast. But prepaduta gear is just a fancy way to describe just your, almost like a beginning formation year. It's a first-year level program that every seminarian from now on will go into before philosophy or pre-theology. And it's almost like a year-long retreat year where you're really building fraternity with your brother seminarians. You're really isolated from most of the seminary except for the prepaduta guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a time to really understand this vocation, to discern a little bit more deeply, and just to really have a deeper sense of this priestly vocation. So I'm excited.
This is a program that Pope Francis was talking about, I believe.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we will expect a full report.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. You know,
yeah.
They're throwing us right in the fire as the guinea pigs here. So, you know, I'll definitely come back and we'll see all the pros and cons. But I know it'll be definitely a program worth going into and worth starting from now on. And I'm really glad that they're adding this to the formation. It'll
so now this will be for all new seminarians going forward, but it won't be sort of retroactive where the take some seminarians and put them back to this level, and not back to this level, but into this level.
Right. Yeah, it'll just be for newer seminarians going into their first year. All right.
Very good. Have you been up to Mount Angel before?
No, I've only been to St. Pat's, so it'll be my first time going up there, and I've heard just great things, so I'm excited to go up there.
It's a beautiful place. Beautiful part of the country. So, how did your vocation come about?
Well, you know, I mentioned I'm from St. Mel, and, you know, that alone is such a huge part in my vocation. I mean, we all know the culture of vocations that's over there. You know, being around seminarians like Father Alex Estrella when he was in seminary, or Dean Marshall, or even Ben Condon more recently, just to have them around and to know that this was a real thing, you know, and to know that there are men going into this locally, and I think that really stood out to me. I've always had a deep respect for priests, and that was sort of the goal of my parents and my family, really building that respect for priests and knowing and having a deeper appreciation of that. So being around them, being in the Catholic school, I went there for 8 years at St. Mel, and always, you know, vocation and religion was always a priority at the school. And it was always something that I really looked forward to learning about and being around. And altar serving as well. I mean, I became an altar servant in fifth grade, and just having that experience of being in the sanctuary, getting closer to priests, being right there in the middle of, you know, the source and summit of our faith was just so special to me, and it really stood out to me and really had a deeper impact in me. So from a very young age, I had this thought, this crazy thought of, well, what if I were to become a priest?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I would always run away from that question, you know, as the normal person would, right? You want to get married and have a family. But as I got older and started getting more involved in the parish, at campus ministry at Cristo Rey, it just all really just came down to wanting to serve the Lord and wanting to do something great. And I just thought the best way for me to do that, God willing, is through the priesthood, which has sort of brought me to this next step of discernment.
So after this propedeutic year, have they told you much about that year, what exactly it's going to involve?
No, you know, I've asked them. The seminary people are still sort of thinking about what that might entail. St. Patrick's actually just finished their first year, and my brother, Matt Grandma, our other new seminarian, will be going over there. And he's telling me from their program, it's sort of they're isolated in their own group, in their own cohort. And they, like I said, sort of like a long, year-long retreat where they're getting to know all the factors of the seminary. They're getting to know a little bit of academics, a little bit of philosophy, some theology, sort of getting your feet in the water, as well as some manual labor around the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Mount Angel, it could be all of that. It could be some of that. It could be completely different. I know that they'll be putting me in a little bit of class but mainly just, you know, just understanding and looking into this vocation in more of a formation type year. But other than that, you know, it's really all just a big question mark, which is why I'm just so excited just to get into it and just see what this is going to entail. You know?
So your main emotion right now, would you say, is excitement?
For sure, excitement. I have, you know, the nerves as well. I'm a little nervous, you know, going into especially a program that's newer, and to be the first one at the seminary to go through it, I think is bringing some nerves. But overall, I mean, that's the priesthood. You know, you're going to be placed in places where you're just not going to know, you know, what your mission entails. So I'm excited to get into it, and I'd say that's my main emotion. Thanks be to God. So
that's wonderful. So did you consider, when you're considering the priesthood, did you consider something other than being a diocesan priest?
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. Chris Jarrett mentioned the Jesuit school. So obviously the Jesuits were an order that sort of struck out to me. I enjoyed teaching. This past year working at St. Mel as a teacher aide, actually, for third grade. So teaching has always been kind of the safe route, I'd say, for me, you know, not going into the priesthood. So teaching has always been, I think, a charism that I would have loved to go into. So the Jesuits were there. Definitely discern a little bit with the fraternity of St. Peter and preserving the tradition of the church has been something that I looked into. But mainly just diocesan, because I really felt comparing all these different orders and the community life against, you know, being right there in the parish life, I think was really the difference for me. I really wanted to be in a parish. All of the priests who I looked up to were all parish priests, and, you know, being with us in the school and being with us in the parish, and I experienced that. The charisms of the diocese priesthood, and I really aligned myself most with that. So I looked into a couple of other orders, but for sure the diocesan has always been the main focus for me.
So once you finish this propedeutic year, then what else, what follows in seminary?
Yeah, so we'll go right into philosophy. So I don't have my college degree yet, so I'll have to finish it up there, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, I'll have 4 years of philosophy, and then that's basically the same average route that after propedeutic that everyone else goes into. So God willing, 9 years, I think it will take for me, and my philosophy 4 years, and then my 4 years of theology. So
is the 9 years, is that, again, is that exciting? Does it seem daunting, or... do you want to be a priest today or tomorrow?
Yeah, well, no doubt. Don't need me tomorrow, you know.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I'm definitely, obviously a little daunting, you know, knowing that it's that many years. But, you know, and then I had the thought of what a priest really does. You know, we're here to help save souls. And, you know, there's a lot that needs to go into that to be prepared for that mission. So although, you know, it seems like a long time, I'm just so ready to enjoy it all, you know, enjoy the ride while I'm here, and to really discern and to be sure, you know, if this is the right vocation. You know, even though I'm saying yes now, you know, I'm not fully committed. You know, I still have to put time into discernment and prayer and to really ask the Lord, is he calling me to this extreme way of living, you know, for him, and this extreme way of giving oneself up for the greater glory of God. I'm excited, you know, even though it might take a long time, I know that it'll bear a lot of fruit, so I think I'm ready for that journey and that adventure. So.
Well, it sure sounds like it. So so the discernment part, is there sort of an act, is there almost a course in discernment, or is that pretty much just up to you and God and talking to God and saying, is this what you want me to do?
Absolutely. I mean, you ask, you know, 100 guys, what have you done to discern? You're going to get 100 different answers.
Yeah.
I mean, for every guy, it's just so different. I know for me, it's just a lot of getting away, a lot of retreat, a lot of just personal silent time with the Lord in adoration has been so big for me. And, you know, I think especially in today's society, we're afraid of silence, you know, and I was not always comfortable with silence, but understanding that that's how the Lord speaks to us most. So for me, having that silence has been very key in my discernment, taking time away and just allowing the Lord to speak to me, you know, not necessarily taking up all the speaking time and asking the Lord questions and you know, telling him all my doubts, but just allowing him to reach into my heart, let his Holy Spirit come into me and inspire me to understand what he wants me to do. Definitely reaching out. I mean, I've had a spiritual director for many months now, and we've really dived very deep into this discernment. So really just talking and going, you know, Father Memo, just a fantastic vocations director. He's been very open, very encouraging. So just having good priests, good influences around to help with the discernment and talk through, you know, they've been through it all, you know, in terms of discernment and getting to their priesthood and into their ministry. So just really soaking up as much information as we can from them. I'd say those two have been the biggest factors for me in trying to figure out what the Lord is calling me to do.
Very good. Well, Ralph, you've got our prayers, and I'm sure our listeners are all praying for you as well. And have a great summer, and then have a great first year up there in Mount Angel, Oregon.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. And to all of you, please continue praying for vocations, you know, especially to the priesthood. You know, we need good holy men to join the ranks.
Indeed.
To give the Eucharist to people. So thank you, Bob.
Indeed. Thank you, Ralph. God bless. That's Ralph Tronchi, one of our great seminarians here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Bishop Emeritus William Wiegand. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hello, this is Moises De Leon from the Office of Family and Respect Life. You're listening to Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunnan.
Thank you, Moises. And this is the Bishop's Hour, and now we're going to talk with the founder of the Bishop Hour, Bishop Emeritus William Wiegand, joins us by phone. Bishop, always good to hear your voice.
Bob, I'm very happy to be with you again and all of our listeners. It's a privilege.
Oh, thank you, Bishop. It was, believe it or not, 23 years ago when you decided it was time to have a radio show here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And we were all wondering about a daily show, and by golly, here we are 23 years later.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm not sure we would have fared so well had we not come upon you and induced you to take over the production of the Bishop's Hour.
Well, thank you for that. It's been a complete labor of love. Every day is a new adventure and a new joy.
And the time goes by very fast. I hadn't stopped to calculate the years, but I knew it was over 20.
Yeah. How did that come about that the diocese even decided to have a radio show?
Well, we you know, before Catholic Radio came on the line in Sacramento, We had been concerned about getting involved in the media more, reaching more of our people, and people far off also, for that matter. And one of our hopes would be that the local church, the bishop and staff, at leaders of different pastoral programs, would have a chance to talk directly to the people that way, and to explain some of our outreach programs, keep people in the loop, what's going on in the diocese. Remember, we cover 20 counties,
right?
Large counties in Northern California, all the way up to the Oregon border and east to the Nevada border.
Right.
So we have a lot of people who are not that connected to the Sacramento area, put
right.
it that way. And we had a Catholic newspaper at the time, of course. That helped. But the radio was another way that we thought we could reach people.
Well, it was a great idea, and Catholic radio has really exploded across the country.
It has, hasn't it? In the past, the same number of years.
Yeah, same number of years, really. Yeah.
Yeah, no question. In a way, we got into it a bit late, kind of slow, but we learned.
Yes.
And expanded, subsequently, of course, we got into a Catholic radio in Spanish
right.
also. And that's a huge clientele often of people that listen to the radio perhaps more than others.
Right. It's a huge hit, the Spanish language radio. It really is. That was a stroke of genius. Very.
Anyway, with the Bishop's Hour, we didn't. We wanted Catholic programming,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't want simply. I want to say anonymous Catholic program,
right.
Or national Catholic program. We wanted to be able to bring the local scene into the equation and to connect with our own people.
Yeah, I think that's been a real key to the success of the Bishop's Hour, is that it is very local. We bring on local guests, we talk about local events, and it helps in one of many other ways to help unite the diocese. Like you say, it's a very big diocese, and to hear you're hearing your pastor, you're hearing the head of a ministry in your church on, or maybe there's a workshop going to happen down the road. I think it's really helpful to have that local element.
And I, you can correct me perhaps, but I think we were the first to develop this mechanism of a Bishop's Hour.
Yes.
And we had trouble, perhaps you recall, in launching it, because we were dealing with, at that time, Immaculate Heart Radio.
Right.
Which was programming almost, if not exclusively, from EWTN.
That's correct.
And they weren't sure that was doable to cut into the normal programming and to cut out an hour each day for local stuff. And it seemed complicated, and we had to kind of push hard on that to get it across. And once we did, of course, the leaders of that network were very happy with it, because it made the Immaculate Heart Radio all the more desirable for many of our people.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, they've started similar. They're probably not named the same as the Bishop's Hour, but similar programs in other dioceses where they have the radio. So Yeah, it was a great idea. It was an absolute great idea because you're right. Till that time, everything was just national programming, which certainly has its place. But it's great to have that. It's kind of like a newspaper. You know, the Sacramento Bee couldn't survive if they didn't have Sacramento News in there. You know,
and exactly. And we also helped spread the idea of cutting out a section for local Catholic programming because as Catholic radio expanded to other states and dioceses, bishops of those areas who weren't all that sold, perhaps contacted on my watch, contacted me personally, mm-hmm. and to get my opinion of how valuable it was and how we made it connect with the local church, and we explained the whole working of the Bishop's Hour. And any bishop I ever talked to thought that was a great idea.
That's
and subsequently I got into Catholic radio and carved out that same option I don't know if it was always an hour, but some local Catholic programming.
Yeah, some of them would do it maybe once a week. Some of them did it more frequently. But they all, I remember going down to Albuquerque to the Diocese of Santa Fe, and the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, to help them open their, we did a sort of an opening show, you know, for them, and met the person that was going to do their local programming, and they were very happy about that they were going to have Catholic radio number one, and that they were going to have their own local programming number two. So
right,
and
that, by the way, is Santa Fe.
Santa Fe. Yeah, but we actually. Santa Fe. Yes, you're right. I didn't get to go there. I ended up in. We went to Albuquerque, of course, but I always have wanted to go there. What a beautiful town that's supposed to be.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. It's like the difference between people who say Boise and say Boise.
Yeah, that's
Bishop Soto, of course, Bishop Wiegand, of course, is from Idaho, and the Diocese of Boise, and they make sure it's spelled with an S and it's pronounced with an S.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before you came to Sacramento, you were in Salt Lake City. And is it called the Diocese of Salt Lake, even though it covers all of Utah?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And the Catholic population is really growing in Utah.
Yes. I think on my watch, I was there 13 years, a little over 13, and I think when I got there in 1980, they were counting 60,000 Catholics.
Wow.
And by the time I left, we were well over 100,000.
My goodness.
But a number of years later, I'm not sure what it is now. I haven't checked, but it was up to 300,000.
Wow.
And the largest segment of that growth was in the Hispanic community.
Right.
The Spanish-speaking community in Utah had started growing prior to my arrival, and one of the reasons I got named there was because I had spent 10 years in Latin America. I knew mm-hmm. Spanish, and both the diocesan level and at the nuncio's office understood that Utah needed to gear up and minister to the Hispanics who who were coming and was already projected to be coming in great numbers.
Right.
And, of course, that happened. And a part of that happened because of growth in the state and in other regards.
Mm-hmm.
And the workforce in agriculture, of course, but in practically everything, in hotels and restaurants,
right,
and different levels of infrastructure depended on lower income employees. And for that period was going to be the Spanish speaking. And of course, that's exactly what happened. Other growth came to Utah and is still coming because of the growth of the state, of industry and
mm-hmm.
research, science, and so forth. And that type of growth is mainly not Hispanic, but it draws leadership-type people, well-educated people from around the country and around the world, and a certain percentage of that growing population are also Catholic.
Yeah, I mean, we've thought for years of, you know, Utah, of course, of the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and yet now it's becoming very, very diverse, and a lot of that is the growth in the Catholic Church, as you say, people coming there for a wide variety of reasons. Utah is one of those states that continues to grow, not rapidly, but quite dramatically.
It's a little bit like on a lesser level, but a little bit like the southeast of our country that, you know, at one time was thought to be mainly Baptist.
Right.
And many of those states are now have a pretty high population mm-hmm. of Catholics because of the migration, the migration of industry and, mm-hmm. and research, which brought people, of course, from the Northeast, but from all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reading not that long ago where Tennessee, I believe, was the lowest. It was about 2% Catholic, and now it's probably two or three times that. And then some of the rest of the Sun Belt, it's even dramatically higher.
Well, and I'm thinking of state of Georgia.
Georgia, yeah.
The city of Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta forever wasn't considered to have much of a Catholic population.
Right.
But it sure does now, and a huge population.
Yeah, it's a dramatic change, and even, you know, even Dallas and Houston and Texas have a substantial increase in the Catholic population. It's amazing, and you're right. People are coming from other places there, and of course the church continues to grow right here in California.
It does, and I think California has been growing forever.
Yes.
And, you get a slight blips. I guess we had one the past year or two where supposedly we had slightly more people leaving the state than entering.
Right.
But the general trend has always been upward. And again, because of the type of people arriving in the state for the lower paying jobs, that supports the whole network, of course. A very high percentage of those have been Catholic, and especially Hispanic, but a good number also Vietnamese, for example,
mm-hmm.
and in more recent years, a very significant number of Filipinos.
Right, and we have a number of parishes that reflect that, and you see in the Diocese of Sacramento how many different languages we celebrate Mass, and I think in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, it's in the 30s or 40s that they number of languages that they celebrate Mass in. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. And that's constantly a developing or changing mm-hmm. situation, because wherever the people of those 40-some languages in L.A. and are, I'm not sure how many in Sacramento anymore, but after the first generation, the people begin to be more more comfortable, or at least the young people
mm-hmm.
are more comfortable with English.
Right.
And so the dependence on the language of the homeland becomes less and less important for
right.
for those people who have been here for a while. But so at that point, they still want some, it's for cultural purposes very often.
Sure.
Because the music is a bit different. And so, for example, we said that we have so many parishes now with large numbers of Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
And most Filipinos have been very comfortable in English forever. Most of
right.
our Filipinos moved from the Bay Area, for one thing.
Right, exactly.
Did not come directly from the Philippines. When I first arrived, we had only one Filipino priest, and no parish that was doing anything in their native language.
Right.
And I remember myself asking different parishes, asking Filipino people if they would like to have some of their worship and sacraments in Tagalog,
mm-hmm.
for example. And typically the answer was no.
Hmm.
But it was not an honest no.
Mm-hmm.
It was, in the typical Asian way, that they told me what they thought I wanted to hear. And plus, they in no way wanted to be seen as different. They were trying desperately to conform and to be fully members of
mm-hmm.
the state of California and
right.
of our parishes. So they didn't want to be relegated to some kind of an ethnic
a
cubbyhole. However, after a few years, and we got more Filipino clergy, the people themselves lost the fear of asking for a little bit in their native culture,
mm-hmm.
and they got to the point where they realized it wasn't going to relegate them to some second class
right.
category.
Right.
So. From then on, there would be little in a Sunday a Mass, for example, mainly in English with a large the Filipino population. There would be one or two of the hymns
mm-hmm.
Might be in Tagalog.
Right.
Or typically, kind of a bilingual English Tagalog.
Right.
So that it didn't close out English-speaking people either. And they felt that it was okay by then to also celebrate some of their typical feast days.
Yes, yeah.
And
I've attended some of those.
Exactly. And that's important for their history and their background and their sense of who they are and
mm-hmm.
where they come from, to
retain elements of their traditional culture and language. And the church has long understood that and has generally tried to accommodate that, which is what I was trying to do way back 28 years ago when I first came and would ask some of the Filipino people if they wouldn't like to have some things in their language. Again, as a bishop of the church, I had a sense that would be important for them. Mm-hmm. But it took a while for them to feel comfortable to do that and to ask for that sort of accommodation.
Yeah, and now we have a number of Filipino priests, one in my home parish in St. James in Davis, and I don't know if we could have the priest seminarian basketball game next Tuesday if it wasn't for our Filipino priests, because there are a lot of them who play basketball.
Oh yeah, they love basketball, yeah. and I think we would not have that that game. In fact, we did not have it prior to having a good number of Filipino priests,
right,
and
right.
seminarians. So.
Well, Bishop, we're as always on a one-hour show. We're against the clock here, but it is always good to hear your voice. And I hope you've got a great vacation planned this summer.
Well, I don't plan too far ahead, but I'm gonna miss the seminary and priest basketball game next week because I'm taking my camper over and spending a few days on the coast.
Oh, very good.
So that's next week. What I do next month, we'll see.
We'll see
how things go.
Well, it is.
At age 85, my predecessor, Bishop Quinn, used to say, you don't buy green bananas. You don't assume too much that you're going to be around for things to ripen, huh? So you don't plan too far in advance.
That's right. You drink minute orange juice.
So it's a delight, Bob, to be with you. And I do pray for all of our listeners and for all of our people. I will continue to do that. That's something that I can still do to pray for the needs of the church and of the world.
Well, your prayers mean an awful lot to us, and be assured that we are all praying with and for you as well.
Well, thank you very much. God
thank
bless.
You, Bishop. God bless. That's Bishop William Wiegand. And, wow, Gabe, what a joy to have Bishop Wiegand on. Just 85, and what do they say, hale and hearty, and indeed he is. And, you know, he had liver transplant surgery probably 12, 13, 14 years ago. And just amazing that a man named Dan Haverty donated part of his liver, and they're both with us and doing and thriving. So, and, yes, he was instrumental in the founder of the Bishop's Radio Hour, and then of course Bishop Soto has continued that with, you know, just great support and regular appearances on the Bishop's Hour, and it, within the last 23 years the Radio Santissimo Sacramento has started up our Spanish language sister station and just has done great work as well here in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit.